Joey Anser, how are you, mate?
I'm good. It's good to see you. London to Alabama.
God damn, I'm in Alabama. God damn. Yes, I'm here doing the Dolph Lundgren film, Castle Falls. It's good to be working again, man. It's been over 6 months.
This year feels like it's like a forgotten year, isn't it? That the amount of time that's passed during lockdown. It's crazy when you think shit is like almost 6 months of your life has just gone, not working or whatever. And then, yeah, strange times.
Full disclosure, me and Joey, we're good friends, good buddies, known each other for a while and quite close, I would say. So we're going to be coming at this interview from that angle, just so everyone knows.
Off the cuff.
Yes. But yeah, Joey. One of the forces to be reckoned with from the British side of martial artists coming into the film world, done many, many projects, burst onto the scene with The Bourne Ultimatum in a huge, huge way. Joey, as I do with all my guests, please, can you let us in on what your martial arts background is?
Grew up in London, in South London, and my cousin, Kojo, who lives in LA at the moment, he trains Chin Wu Kung Fu under Master Lee. Ray Park also trained under him. Quite a lot of people coming up in the UK who did Chin Wu Kung Fu, which is what Jet Li's character in Fearless, he's the Chin Wu Federation, right? It goes right back to there. So he would come over and teach me and my brother wushu Kung Fu. I remember he had the book with all the stances, make us do press-ups and be in horse stance and stuff. Started with that, but it, you know, when you're that young, you're not that serious. It was when I moved to Ghana at age 9 with my family. I then started Taekwondo. It was ITF Taekwondo and did that. And we trained hard because in Ghana, it was like an outdoor dojo, stone floor, bare feet, no bodyguards or head guards or kind of mitts or anything. So it was, it was hard. Cool. Yeah, like the black diaspora, but love martial arts, whether it's in Africa or African Americans or whatever, there's just something about the martial arts that really captured black people across the world, and they train very hard in it and love it. And my dad did martial arts, did Kenpo.
Oh, yeah.
In Ghana growing up, they had an American, possibly missionary. You had quite a lot of Americans in Ghana way back before it gained its independence when it was still a colony. And they were, he remembers at school, they were doing the hot cauldrons with sand and gravel, digging the hands in, like an Enter the Dragon, you see them all.
Yeah.
Doing that to strengthen the calluses. So my dad, you know, was big into martial arts and that kind of trickled down.
And your dad passed away now, hasn't he? But he was quite a well-known fashion designer, right?
That's right. Kofi
Ghana. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He was West African fashion. He really put the country on the map and done stuff with Italian Vogue. And yeah, he had a very prolific career. There were like 2,500 people at his funeral. But yeah, man, so back to the martial arts, Taekwondo for most of my time in Ghana, which was 5 years, to sort of tag black, and then got into ninjutsu. My aunt, my mum's sister taught English in Japan for 5 years. So when I was growing up in London, my aunt was in Japan for a big chunk of that and would send back tabby boots and books on ninjutsu. And
as a kid, getting some tabby boots and some cat claws and stuff like that. Maybe I've got a shuriken. I've got a shuriken. And these are illegal. I mean, those were the times, man.
I got shuriken seized from me at an airport. I bought them in France and flew back and I got stopped.
Yeah.
By customs. And they,
of course.
They had some nunchucks and several shuriken I'd bought. And I can
see just some stupid kid with a load of sharp weapons in his suitcase. No, I'm a ninja.
And I said, what's going to happen to them? And they just were like, they'll be destroyed. And I was like, oh.
And you wept.
So that was that. But yeah, the Ninja Turtle craze, that was peak for me because I was still at primary school and Ninja Turtles hit that 90s.
That was early 90s, wasn't it?
Yeah, the movie came out 1990 and I was just fanatical. And I grew up reading the Eastman and Laird. Remember the original Ninja Turtle books, the graphic novels?
Comics, yeah.
Black and white, super gory. Yeah. So finding a ninjutsu place in Plymouth, of all places, I was like, I can't believe it. So I went to this place and there were no youths there. It was all adults. So for those of you that don't know, Plymouth is the home of the Royal Navy in the UK. So a lot of Marines down there, a lot of, you know, armed forces personnel. And it was all full of Marines, basically, for the most part, training. And it was pretty full on. Because you go in, I'd done Taekwondo, so you're thinking all the, you know, high kicks and flicky kicks. And I remember the first time sparring with this guy and being ragdolled and put in a rear naked choke and put to sleep. It puts the fear of God in. You're like, Jesus, because it's not until you feel a grown man with his full strength grab you as hard as he can and just choke you. It suddenly is a wake-up call, isn't it? Like, whatever preconceptions I had about how street safe I would be have just been redefined, you know, and that really helped. Being a youngster, 14, 15, training with men like soldiers, toughened you up real fast, you know.
Yeah, well, good on you for going back the next week and the week after and the week after and the week after.
Exactly. So, ninjutsu, unfortunately, some of you listeners will be aware of the Bujinkan, which is headed by Grandmaster Hatsumi Sensei, but ninjutsu has got a bit of a comical joke. I mean, on McDojo Life and Bullshido, you see so many videos of these.
Nothing to do with my two ninja movies, though, I'm sure.
What, you say you've contributed to the McDojo aspect?
I may have a little bit. Dead realistic my movies were, but anyway.
Kokuken jutsu, like bone breaking. There was one aspect of ninjutsu that was all about bone manipulation. Most of the stuff I take from it, wrist locks, joint locks, and body physiology. So that's
Alain Moussi, yeah.
Got a gun to the back of his head. He's holding a guy by the neck. It's very quick, the techniques, but that sort of viciousness of avoiding the gun, backfisting him into a big sweeping arm lock. Yeah, it's nice stuff. I mean, what do you make of that stuff? But that I would say is like Taijutsu 101, those kind of movements and body manipulations.
Very vicious, violent. Yeah. Looks nice on camera as well.
And just skeletal manipulation. Can you see what, like, you're grabbing from the eye sockets, ripping the guy's head back. They used to say in ninjutsu, the head's the steering wheel of the body. But if you control someone's head, their center of mass moves with it. So you can open people up for nice.
Well, we'll get into this, but you actually had me do something similar to that in Green Street 3 on the big guy at the beginning, if I remember rightly. But he was a bit, I mean, I don't want to do it for real because we're only making a movie, but he was a bit stiff.
Oh, yeah, I do remember. I do remember that real big deal.
Hammer fist.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I can remember clearly, towards the end of school, I must have been in sixth form. I'd been training martial arts, obsessed, hard. I was tricking now. I could do flips and cool stuff that most people couldn't do. And I suddenly thought, maybe it's not such a crazy idea getting into movies. I think I'm good enough. You know, you need that self-belief to think I can do this.
Yeah.
And then I had heard Ray Park, ironically, plays a bit of a fundamental role, because suddenly Star Wars Episode One comes out and we see Darth Maul, and that blows your mind, right? Seeing butterfly twists and the double lightsaber, and you're just like, oh my God, who's this dude? Then you hear the story, you start digging, and people are like, originally this guy Ray Park was meant to just be the stunt double for Darth Maul, and they had another actor who was going to play Darth Maul. But when George Lucas saw Ray in all the gear, he was like, you are Darth Maul now. And he just got rid of whichever poor actor had it. Yeah. And there, and that was Ray's career born. So maybe naively, I thought, if you become a stunt guy and you're good and you get noticed, you'll then get given the role, you know, like being a stunt guy and an action actor are one and the same thing. Yeah. So I started then thinking, okay, how do you become a stunt guy in the UK?
Not There's- really realizing that Ray Park had a one in a million shot.
Exactly. Yeah, it's virtually an urban legend, that thing, you know. It's like these dudes that get discovered on the street. Like, you can't give that as advice to someone. Just hope you get discovered on the street. Whilst I was at university, I got to work on Batman Begins as like a junior stunt guy. They would now call it special action extra.
So now, I was approached to be one of these ninjas as well back in the day, wasn't it? Batman Begins.
Yeah.
Yeah. The League of Shadows.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But I had an audition for that. So I remember I auditioned for Chris Nolan way back then. But I got given, get this, because this is just, I was with a sports modeling agency at the time. And they said, Joey, we've got an audition for you for this. Did they even say it was Batman at the time? Maybe they did, maybe they didn't. But they were like, you're going for the role of like a Euro fighter. Like, they made it out like you're some weird MMA fighter or something. So I went to this audition in Muay Thai shorts, hand wraps, and a vest in front of Chris Nolan, like a proper acting audition, having to say some lines. And then I find out they're ninja and it's the League of Shadows. I'm thinking, what the hell was I told?
Why wasn't I told this? I am a ninja.
I know, I've done ninja. So I went in, and of course, Nolan was probably thinking, let's just get this out the way. What has this guy come as? So we auditioned for the, they needed like 50 ninja. And the sequence where they're all changing rank and file, and Liam Neeson's hiding, cutting, you know, remember Christian Bale sort of gets his arm cut. So then he cuts another ninja's arm. So Liam Neeson thinks that's him. And that was expanded. There was all this cool kata stuff. Four of us would run forward and do kick the moons and land with a sword and like, but when we got on the set, it was too...
Hey, listen, man. Batman Begins is a great film, but I want to see that film. I want to see a film which is about this guy going to train at that place with all these ninjas and just stay there. I thought it's brilliant.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Matter of half the film was The League of Shadows. That would have been great. That would have been great. So that was, Batman Begins was a massive turning point for me because I got the chance to essentially be a stunt guy on a big studio film. So that was the turning point. I remember two things. One of the stunt guys said to me, if you want the glory, be an actor. He said, if you just love doing physicality and stunts, but you don't want any attention, any glory, be a stuntman and you'll enjoy the career. But if you want the glory, if you want to be noticed, it will eat you up being a stuntman because you'll spend your career on the sidelines watching actors do stuff and think, I want to do that. So I really appreciate whoever told me that. I forget. But I thought, I have to be honest to myself. I do want, if I'm going to do some crazy fight sequence, I want people to see it's me, right?
Yeah.
So this is the thing. I used to do a lot of theater as a kid, but when it's all Shakespeare and wearing tights and it's not cool, right? For some reason back then, acting as a kid wasn't cool. So I moved away from it and was obsessed with martial arts. So here I am back on Batman Begins, week six of standing on a hot set in a ninja suit, doing not much. And I'm watching Christian Bale and Liam Neeson doing a scene where the sort of end of Bruce Wayne's training, where Liam Neeson gives him the sword and says, you need to execute this prisoner. And I was watching it and hairs on the back of my neck stood up just from the drama. And I suddenly was like, that feeling I'm feeling, that's what I want. I want to do that. I want to do the dialogue and the drama, but I also want to do the stunts.
Yeah.
And then I suddenly realized I need to become an actor. I need to be an actor who can do his own action, not a stunt guy. And that's nothing against stunt guys because they're goddamn heroes, right? Yeah. It's just, you've got to be honest if you want to be the name. So from that moment, after Batman Begins, stop training for the register. Then it's like, how do I become a dramatic actor?
Just going back to the Bourne Ultimatum, so you got the part, incredible, massive role to get, and then you fly out A711, and I think you're training with Jeff Imada.
And John Eusebio. Right? Yeah, so John Eusebio.
What's that experience like?
That was great. It taught me so much, man. I really have to give a lot of props to 8711 as a business, as a concept, as a collective, the way they approach things. John Eusebio was the assistant fight choreographer, and Jeff Imada was the fight choreographer on there. It's funny. I arrive jet lagged as hell, you can imagine. First day, it's hot. It's like peak summer in LA. Turn up there, and remember, Jeff Imada goes through my sort of martial arts CV. Says here, you've trained taekwondo for X amount of years. This belt, who with? Blah, blah, blah. Says you've done ninjutsu. He's grilling me. And he's like, okay. So then I start training with John. And he starts teaching me combinations. But he's exploited, like, oh, this guy's a right leg kicker. Oh, this guy is kind of like orthodox or whatever. So every combo is going to have my weak leg in. Yeah. They make, so you're like, somehow I feel like a beginner. I feel awful. He's giving me things that I'm just not. But it was so subtle. It didn't seem like it was designed that way at first. It just seemed like by chance, the combinations he had given me didn't allow me to show any of my strengths. It was exploiting all my weaknesses. And they drilled me, and I'd be getting gassed and sweating. And he was like, come on, man. You know, it's just a warm-up. You know, it's like making you feel really low. So the first day was hard. It was like 6 hours of just being beasted and you're jet lagged and not sleeping well. And you go back to the hotel and you're like, oh my God, am I going to get fired off this thing? You come back the next day and you're just, after I think like 4 or 5 days of just being made to feel this small, Jeff comes in and he explains, he's like, look, when people come in that we need to train, who, especially who have a martial arts background, we need to smash them because they may have an ego and preconceptions of I know this and I know that. And we need to break you down so you're willing to learn. He's like, now we've done that. Show us what you're good at. Now show us what you.
Oh, okay, cool. Right. He pulled a Mr. Miyagi on you.
Yeah, exactly. It was so good because it was such a humbling. It's not that I was going in there thinking I'm the fucking big bollocks, but it's like maybe you're going in thinking this is going to instantly be collaborative. And they're like, no, we're going to beast you. And it did expose from that point on. I was like, I now know all the weak areas I've got to work on. Right? They showed us the fight, maybe on a previs, but they separated me and Matt. So someone was playing Desh, one of the stunt team, opposite Matt, so he could learn all of Bourne's stuff. And then a stunt guy was playing Bourne, so I could learn all of my stuff against him separately. So we did like, each did a full day of just our own stuff. Then they put me and Matt together to then start doing the fight with each other. Yeah. And then they brought us to the set for the first time.
That seems like a smart way to do it, to do it that way and then put you both together. Because it's baffling around at the beginning. Aren't you trying to figure out what the choreography is and it? You know, you might pick it up quicker than him or he might pick it up quicker than you, whatever.
Yeah, so it seemed cool. Put us together. Then we went to the set itself and walked it through. So a lot of the footage you see in the making of planning the punches that you've got, the Bourne behind the scenes, where you can see me just wearing normal clothes, that's us walking through it for the first time on the set. And then you know, we get down to filming. Now this, when Julia Stiles fish hooks me in the mouth, she slipped, her finger slipped and she cut. You know, when you get cut so deep, it goes white. You're down to the dermis. You've got the epidermis and then the dermis beneath, right? And the dermis is just like bone white. You know, when you cut yourself and it takes a while before it even starts bleeding, and it's just she did that. So I had like a Chelsea smile across.
Oh, that was nice of her.
She was mortified.
It looks it looks pretty real.
Yeah, because she pulls hard enough. It slipped, you can imagine. It slipped and just scratched.
Yeah.
So there's a section they cut out. It's a shame. Like when I get up from that backwards roll, when Bourne then kicks me, so she fish hooks me, I get rid of her.
Yeah.
This roll, instantly, I jumped and did a stop kick. Like Bourne came running in to football kick me whilst I was getting up from the roll. And I jumped and did a stop kick. And then we went into a much longer trapping section. But they've maybe Paul Greengrass thought the jumping stop kick. Imagine a stop kick, but a flying side kick one.
Oh, right.
Stop his kick with that. Maybe
too exaggerated.
Yeah, so you could see a bit of the trapping going in there.
Yeah.
Funny moment. Bourne getting slammed into the glass cabinet here, right? So that was him. That was Matt who did that.
Right? That's Matt.
Yeah. So the glass cabinet, it's got glass doors, right? And then it's got a glass shelf in there.
Yeah.
So I think the first time I slammed him, I was being a bit careful because it's the money, it's Matt, right? So I smashed him in, but it wasn't. They were like, Joey, it's looking too weak. You need to put him in there. I'm like, if you're sure. And Matt's like, yeah, no worries. You know, just so I'm like, okay, I'm going to straight arm bar you and drive you into this thing. So they reset the sugar glass. I slam him in there, boom, and he's just like, my head. I just hear my head, and he's dazed. Ring around, and we're like, what? What did you hit? The front doors had smashed, but the shelf was still there. Somehow, I armbarred him in. He had gone in, smashed. His arm must have dropped, and the pane of glass that was the shelf had gone. He had fully...
I was expecting to break when the doors went through, but it didn't.
Yeah, I mean, normally that stuff explodes. You just look at it and it just shatters sometimes on its own. But this somehow didn't break, so he conged his head.
Is that the take that they used?
I guess so. I mean, yeah.
He didn't want to do it again, did he, after that?
Yeah, I mean, there's a shelf.
He must have felt responsible.
I was just like, you asked me to put you in there, so I put you in there.
Here we go. So I think you told me once there was a story behind the fact that there's a stop there and you're resisting against it, and then you go for the side semi.
So, okay, so there was this whole thing. Dan Bradley was the second unit director on this, and very talented guy, but maybe not the most, at that time, most communicative person. So I remember the first time he came and saw the side somersault, me do it for real. He was like, great, you know, I know a great wire rig will come up, you know, with a harness and we'll put you on the wire and spin you. And I'm just like, why? I can do it for real. It don't put it, don't wire this gag. He's like, yeah, but you know, can you do it 10, 15 times type thing? And I'm just thinking, well, if we get
why don't you just make sure you get it on the first shot with my first question? But anyway.
So I'm constantly saying to Jeff Amada, I don't want this wired. I can do it for real. And he's like, yeah, I agree. So with main unit, I shoot it. Fight's going on. I suddenly see off the back of the soundstage, they've got a wire rig and some UK stunt guys are in it trying to practice side somersaults. I'm thinking, why? Anyway, when it comes to doing the side somersault, it's like ants. People I didn't even see in the production had their head round the corner. It's a funny thing, right?
Because are they thinking you're going to fail, or they've heard about this size somersault that's going to
look? Because it's an unusual thing where you've got an actor who's doing all his own stunts, right? No, I wasn't doubled for a frame of that film.
Yeah,
and sometimes it can rub up the you know what? When you're an actor that straddles the world of stunts, you're like the Daywalker. You're like Blade, aren't you?
Yeah. You're an unknown quantity as well, I suppose. It's not like, oh, Jackie Chan's here. Oh, well, of course he's going to do it himself. It's like, who's this guy?
Exactly. They do this kid thinking he in Johnny Big Bollocks, who's gonna. So you in, I think now the UK stunt guys know me, but you've got to pay your dues, and there is a couple of, quite a lot of friction because I don't know. So suddenly it's a full house to see me do this thing.
Pressure's on.
The pressure's on, and it's one thing doing it in the gym, right? You look at that shot, look at the cabinet. I mean, there were all these edges and doors and things, like, so the margin of error is very slim because there's objects that you'll land on. So I remember under the pressure the first time I did it, I think I sort of splatted. I didn't get over for
it. Take number one.
Oh God. And probably everyone's like, yes, this is what we can see. So I'm like, Matt, give me a bit more of a boost, because it requires Matt to do a certain something to help.
You're having to ask Jason Bourne for a little help here.
Distance, yeah. So take two and three were good. I actually tore...
Matt, do you understand the mechanics of a side somersault? Because I need a little.
Yeah, a little something. I tore my adductor doing that, actually, because it's an unusual movement. You're kicking up into a sort of, almost like a box split.
And then tightening.
Take off, tucking. So if your adductors aren't used to that motion, all the time in LA prepping it, and then in London in the hotel doing it over and over again, then on the set I had pulled it, and after I think take three or four, boom, it just goes numb, you know, when you tear it.
How many takes of that side summit did you end up doing?
I think three four, yeah. Tops.
Once they had it, you didn't have to do it again?
No. So I thought, we've got it, we're out the woods, the wire thing is not going to happen. Come round to second unit. Now the wire is being brought out. And I had a bit of a set to with Dan, because I was just like, look, Dan, we've already got it in the can. What do we need this for? And it was like, cut a long story short, we need a moment that shows why you're doing the side somersault. So as the second unit director, I want to get an insert. We go from the wide shot of Matt wrapping your wrist into the lock, and then we're gonna land in a tight of you with your face. We need to see that you can't resist the lock, so you're gonna go with it. You're gonna make the decision to now do the somersault. It says if we don't have that, you go into the somersault, and a lot of people may not realize why. They may not have clocked that because Bourne is locking your wrist.
Yeah. And what do you think now that it's done? Do you think you needed that moment? Like me as a martial artist, and yourself as well, you know, we know what an Aikido move is and what it's going to do. And that if I saw somebody side somersault out of that movement, I know that he's saved himself and he goes in for the sweep. And yeah, I get it. But what do you think, general public?
I think it's a cool catch your breath moment, and then it takes off again, because it settles, you see the face, and it's almost a moment like, oh, Bourne's got him. Bam, he's gone out of it again. So all he wanted the wire to do is from this position, tug me out of frame. And that's all he's using it for. I mean, technically, I could have just jumped.
And cut to the wire.
And let me do an Aikido just break fall, right, out of frame. But that's why, and I just thought all this hoo-ha with this wire thing, and if that's all you're using, and as soon as he told me, I was like, cool, I'm on board, say no more, let's do the shot. But you know, you've got I think when you're a young blood coming up,
young buck.
I was young, 23's young, when I look back, it's like you're
young, dumb and full of cum.
Exactly. So these people are thinking this kid needs to be cut down to size, but you know,
yeah.
Do it, we get
will,
it.
He will go on the wire. Oh, he will go on the wire.
Oh, at one point he was like, you don't want to do the gag? We'll just pack up and go home.
Hey, that old chestnut, yeah.
Boom, Dave Leach.
That Leach, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the best thing about Bourne is the way he's using these, you know, weapons.
So there's some painful real hits here. So that all of these are real hits. If you look at all of them,
yeah.
When he pops the book in my throat, look at that final elbow. So the final hit, he puts the book up to my face, two punches, then pulls the book away and elbows. Go frame by frame, he fully elbows me across the jaw. Look at that. Look at that.
Brilliant.
I saw a white flash. You know when you get hit?
Yeah.
Real. Because my head ricochets. It ricochets off the wall.
This is what happens when you throw me into the wardrobe too hard. Flash.
Yeah. Look at how hard. Look at Matt's face. Look at the frame. Look at the rage on his face as he smashes that in.
Yeah.
Ooh, look at that.
Jason Bourne retribution there.
And it was a proper like Muay Thai slicing elbow. Wasn't it?
Like the point of the elbow in.
So I saw a white flash from that. And you know, my throat was so messed up from that book hit.
Yeah.
I couldn't speak. It's not like I just had a croaky voice. No sound. My larynx was so mashed up.
How many times did you do the book hit?
More than I can remember. But then afterwards, I thought, will my voice ever return? It was just and I thought, Jesus. I came back to film. I have no voice. But that was great because it was such real hits. It looked good. And the head gun off his elbow and then the wooden cabinet. That was Matt being thrown in there as well. Look at the dirty way I throw Matt into that.
So he's very game, Matt Damon.
Yeah, I mean, look, that's him. He's up for taking a spill.
Was it kind of padded, the set, or not?
So the sink was soft that my head gets rammed against, boom, there. But the back, so this is a funny trivia. Originally, the back of the set that we're looking at, the back of the shower, the fight never originally went to the back. It stayed by the sink. And suddenly there was a decision, Jeff or someone was like, actually, after your head gets slammed on the sink, Matt will sort of do-si-do spin and throw me to the back. But art department hadn't put any soft breakaways at the back of the set. So there was a metal soap dish, like a square, but with like sharp edges nailed into the wall. So I get spun. I'm not wearing a back pad. I go in. I'm winded. I actually can't breathe. And I can't talk. And they're like, what's wrong? I'm like, and as I pull off this soap dish, has broken out of the wall and is stuck between two of my ribs through my jacket. And Jeff comes
the jacket,
pulls it out. So it almost semi-punctured my lung a bit because it winded me through my back.
Well, they didn't think that through, did they?
No, because it was a last minute thing. Like, oh, let's go to the back. And no one had thought that these aren't breakaways. I mean, accidents happen. That's why as an action actor, you should always...
You should have a back pad on.
Not for that bit, no. Mm. Otherwise,
yeah, it's always best to get padded up. I mean, you know this, but just for people listening, when you can pad up within reason, always pad up because you've got to do it again and again and again. Let's talk about the elephant in the room because I've made no secret really. Of how I feel about the fights in the Bourne films, and you are in the best fight from the Bourne films. I'd like to know what your opinion is about it. For me, the choreography is fantastic, the performance is fantastic. I understand why Greengrass wanted to shoot it that way, and that's his style. Actually, watching the trailer for his new movie, and he's got a completely different style, which I'm really excited to see what he does with that. I understand the reasons for doing it. I just feel like, man, I wish I could see more of what's going on.
Yeah, there's some interesting anecdotes. Hopefully it's been enough years I can talk about it without getting into trouble. I remember I was having these discussions with Jeff Imada throughout filming. Is this film going to be shot like Bourne Supremacy was? Super shaky, super tight, where you can't see anything. And Jeff was like, well, look, hopefully... Knox, I'm like, if I'm going to do all this stuff, like we want to see it. So we get closer, we get to the morning of the fight. I can't remember why I'm wandering around craft service or the breakfast tent and Paul Greengrass is there. And I'm like, hey, Paul. And he's like, hey, Joey, how are you feeling about the fight? And I'm like, I'm ready. I said, I was born to do this, Paul, and I'm going to give you the best fight in the franchise. He was like, that's what I like to hear. And he's like, if you hear that fight coordinator moaning about the way the fight's going to be captured, don't listen to him. And I was like, what? I was like, what? Have you and Jeff had a, you know, a set to? He's like, no, he just doesn't agree with the way I capture the fights type thing. You know. And he was like, what do you think? I was put on the spot. Yeah. And I was like, look, I think that documentary style, it gives a kind of, it's like impressionism, the best way. It's not, as opposed to fine still life, where it's about trying to almost photographically recreate what you're seeing. It's impressionism. It's giving you blood, sweat, snarl, seeing someone's canine details. So you just come away with the essence of violence rather than a photographic recreation of every detail. So I was like, Paul, I understand the art style, but at the same time, I would, if some very intricate stuff is being performed choreography-wise, I'd like to see it. And he said, yes, but the less you see, the more you believe. And I remember looking at him thinking, I don't know if I agree with that, because if what you're seeing is real, what's not to believe? If what's being performed, like that elbow across my jaw, is real, how is seeing less of that more believable? Does that make sense?
Absolutely makes sense what he's saying. I mean, listen, that was the whole thing with Jaws, wasn't it? The less you saw the shark, the more you believed it. But of course, the shark looked like shit.
Yeah.
But your fight with Matt doesn't look like shit.
And that's the thing. I think he split the difference compared to the Bourne Supremacy fight. This Ultimatum one is a little, you can see a bit more.
But, and I would say that probably the reason for that is getting in the editing room and seeing that it looked better than those other fights. For instance, the one in Supremacy where he fights the guy with the blinds in Germany. You know, the other guy is a great actor, but he's probably not that physical and he probably wasn't looking that great.
We'll never see it. Jeff had the Video Village guy, had Final Cut open, and we were dropping in all the wide and mid shots on the timeline as we, you know, a lot of that shaky cam is not done in camera. It's done as some kind of post effect because I'm seeing the rushes after every take and it's not, it's like they've dropped frames and changed the shutter angle because we're seeing playback. It doesn't look like that. It's not as jittery.
Are they going in tighter on the frame and then manipulating it?
I'm sure, because seeing the playback, so we, there was a cut as we went of loads of wides, like imagine that fight, but more like a Hong Kong framing.
That's the one we want to see.
Actually, camera operator.
Come on, Greengrass, you're doing your new movie that doesn't have shaky cam. Can we have a director's cut of Bourne Ultimatum with the wides?
It would be. I wonder if Jeff Amada, have you got it somewhere? The reason I think, in my humble opinion, without blowing my own trumpet too much, that fight resonated so much for the following reasons. Motivation. You've got a 15-minute build-up to this fight. The fight only lasts for a minute, 50 seconds. It feels like a lot much longer. But you've got a whole build-up of anticipation to this fight. And I think in designing and writing action, Bourne has already lost the female love of his life in the previous film, Marie. And he knows that Desch is now going back after Julia Stiles' character. Bourne cannot allow another woman that he cares about to die on his behalf. So he is a man possessed, running over rooftops, evading police through people's apartments to get to her before I get to her. That in its alone, the motives for Bourne wanting to fight me are very, very potent. Then when we come together, it's the first time you're seeing Blackbriar and Treadstone, two generations of the same program, interact with each other. It's the same anticipation when Arnold and the T-1000 fight for the first time. and they grab each other, and you're like the new model versus the young. They're feeling each other out almost like.
Hang on, let me ask you this. How many cameras shooting that fight?
I'm only really aware of one, two tops, but often one. I think we shot a wide master of the fight.
So you're made aware of at least one or two cameras, and you're thinking, okay, well, we've got to make it work for this camera. Maybe that one if we're lucky, but probably there's other cameras around capturing stuff that you don't even know about. That's what I remember when I was, because I had a fight in Ultimatum. I remember about five cameras. I remember trying to make it work for one and asking someone, which camera is this going to work for? And they were kind of like, all of them. And I was like, well, that's not going to work. Anyway.
We just did loads of coverage, man. That's the only thing I would say. It was like 6 13-hour days to do that fight. It's custom now for people on this show to pay tribute to you, but it's
the only reason I do it, mate.
It's like an antidepressant, isn't it? Just peps you up enough to keep going another day, right?
Yeah.
But I think it's the combination of Boyka is such a physically imposing present, like your performance in that, you're so present. You can see tough guys, but there's nothing behind the eyes. But you are like it's like seeing a jungle cat looking at you. There's this presence, there's this energy, and the way they move tells a story. And Boyka had that, and you're seeing this ferocity of just brutal punches and kicks, but then these kicks, but you're targeting them, whether it's a 540 or the Guyver kick, or I love that sequence where you're in the gym, in the ring, and isn't Chambers looking from on top? He's watching you train and just fighting the guys where you do the X out, the back somersault with the straddle, the split kick. That whole sequence is just like, people like me, and I'm a young'un, like you're a generation above me.
Yeah.
I'm 38 now, or about to be 38 next month. And so you've got, you know, I don't know what, 5 years on me or something?
Yeah, I'm 44. Can't believe you brought it up.
but I was like, Jesus Christ, if this guy was my age, I'm done. Thank God I've got a few years on him to get better, right? I don't think I would have had the belief to get to like the size I did playing Akuma if I hadn't seen you in Undisputed, because it's a game changer. You know, when the bar suddenly gets raised and you're like,
oh, thanks, man.
Yeah, it's...
Yeah, I appreciate that.
It's really nice to do something that is kind of like a pillar in the industry that certain things get measured against. You know, you're like in the annals of action film history, Undisputed 2 and Scott Adkins really arriving on the scene.
Oh, great, man. Thanks, man. That makes me happy. That makes me happy.
And I feel like Born Ultimatum, for me, that was a moment where it's like, if you're to go through the history of cinema, to be part of a piece of cinematic history that almost changed. You saw the Bond films change. So many films try to imitate that fight and that. And it's, and you step outside of yourself and you're like, that was me. I was part of this thing that everyone saw, and just to make a little contribution to cinema like that is it's a very special.
That fight in Born Ultimatum is always on like the top 10 fight scenes of all time, top 20 fight scenes of all time. It's always like up there of all the Born films. It's the best fight.
I only really get stuck in the final fight, but it was great. Look at him punch me in the jaw for real. You see that?
No, but you broke his ribs, so fair game.
Broke his ribs there in that side shot. But bam, that's why I broke his ribs.
He hits you in the face there, does he?
Put me in the jaw.
Keep getting in the same place. Bosh, because he's thinking, you've broke my rib. I'm going to give you one back. Brilliant. He's a lovely guy, though. Great guy. Oh, I love Sven.
And the way he moves, man, is incredible.
For a big guy, yeah. High kicks. Wasn't there something funny that happened here?
The fight starts, you run, you shimmy, and then you jump, sort of split back kick, Michael Kizarakos. And you nailed him so hard, because you weren't aware, because you carried on with the choreography. He was on his knees, almost holding his eyes like Van Damme.
In Bloodsport.
Yeah. At the time, he said that he went blind. But you had kicked him so hard, like you've always stopped his heart temporarily, delivering blood to his optic nerve. And beast to see, you had stolen his sense of vision. But he had to go and just almost duck, because it was -5 that night. We filmed that fight. Do you remember? Bad. He took himself out of the thing, and almost like when animals take themselves off to die. He just took himself out into the darkness in -5 ice. And just was in a fetal position, considering his life choices. But I think you just nailed him.
I wasn't trying to hit him overly hard. But sometimes you just get that perfect technique and it's hard to... You want to hit with the flat of the foot, but, you know, sometimes if it's moving targets, maybe the heel digs in a bit.
Back kicks, he, because you shimmy, so he almost goes the wrong way, then moves back towards you. So... he met your foot, you know, he was coming into you. It's not like he was static and just took it.
Yeah.
And it went.
Well, he's running forward, so maybe the distance was hard to. Or maybe I just thought, screw you, take that.
You're a racist. Yeah. There's some legends came from that set of get it together, mate. Scott pointing at these poor stunt guys.
What's it like choreographing Scott Adkins in a high stress situation?
And we had a couple of set twos on that. Lucky our friendship endured to Green Street 3.
I don't even remember about the choreography or something.
Yeah, you were like, you wanted, I was like, every punch can't be a boyka. I know you like your big John Wayne wiping punches. And I was giving you slightly different stuff. And you're like, let's just give the audience what they want to see. See me smack the guy in the head, and I was like, do they though? There was one bit where it was it was tense between us, but it was that's what it's like. You're in the trenches when you filmmake, and it's
well, that's it. You, my friend Isaac Florentine always says that making a movie is like going to war, and if you're going to go to war, go with your friends.
Yeah.
And yeah, you'll have disagreements because you're all reaching to make something good. It's inevitable. It's stressful, and you're tired and hours are long and it's freezing and you're making a fight movie and people are getting punched and hit and injured and all the rest of it. So it's unavoidable, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. And I think if you have all the money in the world, you can have months to previs and get everything where you're happy, then there isn't that pressure on the day when you're filming. But you know, on some of these lower budget stuff, you're almost figuring it out as you go. Yeah.
The low budget stuff, which essentially is my life. So, you know. Anyway. I can just quickly talk about this because you kicked the can off my head. And I just want to point out that at the time, it felt like you ripped my scalp off. Bang. Now, if you watch it fast, looks like sweet. Oh, he's kicked that can off his head. But if you watch it slow, you can definitely see my scalp try to detach from my skull.
There is a tug, isn't there?
Bang. Yeah, trash. I don't know what it was, but it was, for some reason, it really hurt.
Well, I remember you were like, you afterwards, by scare, you really clocked me. And I was like, no, I didn't. And we looked at the can. You remember it had like a, so if this is the can and you just cut out a triangle wedge like that, that's how the can was folded. So I think the kick had come at a diagonal
Yeah.
He flattened the can, but pushed the base.
Oh, that was it, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's
the base of the can was pushed deep into my skull. Yeah, it really hurt, but it looked good. It looked good.
Interesting film. I thought it was a pretty cool concept. Malin Ackerman from Watchmen was a joy to work with. She's really lovely. It was just quite rushed, the fight. There were a lot of disagreements about what the choreography should be, and it ended up what it was. But a funny thing, like, Cusack's a big dude, right? He's really tall. And we had this whole sequence down here.
It gets... According to Benny the Jet, he's a proper kickboxer.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Benny's been his sensei for years, hasn't he? Hence the Gross Point Blank, you know, cameo. So that's where I met Benny. Benny was here whilst we filmed this. We got down, I forget what the sequence was, but when John slams me against here, so I think I went to do an underhook. Yeah, I went to do an underhook. It's a bit where I'm meant to reverse, so I underhook him and spin him back. And I remember I went to underhook, and he just countered it. And I thought, what are you doing? So I underhooked him again, and he fought it off. And then he punched me across the face. He became like freestyle. He had gone completely off the reservation with the choreography. I don't know what was going through his head, but he wasn't allowing me to do what the choreography said we should do. And then just hit me. So it just became this weird, like, dirty boxing in the pocket kind of. And you come out and you're like, he had kicked this. There's a bit where I come out with a gun. When he bursts through the door, I'm about to execute Malin Ackerman, and he's meant to kick me in the forearm, kick the gun out. Now, normally, you would use, that's your foot, the top of your foot, right? The instep. So it's, he was toe stubbing me with the tread at the front, like conk. I had a hematoma that was like that out of my arm. I remember after lunch, I came back, I saw him, and I just went like this. This, and he was like, oh my God, man, what happened to your arm? And I was like, it's a Cusack kick. Like, you've been kicking me repeatedly with the tread. Can you exercise a bit of mercy and kick me with the, it's just the gun disarm, right? That's all we're trying to sell.
Of the fight.
I know. I know. I my arm was in pieces. In pieces. And you don't want to look. Yeah. I respect Cusack as an actor, but when someone's like not being careless or not thinking, it was just a bit, it was one of those tense fights. I don't think he was in the best of moods, and it was all, you know, there's no clear communication going on. So, you know, when it's like, okay, we're just doing this thing, no one's really talking, and it's like a merry-go-round, you're just on it for the ride, and what happens happens, and sometimes some stuff happens and you've got to say, look, but you know. Because Ryu and Ken are from the same style, but Ken is a bit faster and Ryu's a bit more solid. So reflecting two practitioners of the same style, but their personalities and how that channels through in their preferences. But yeah, it's very interesting because it'd be easy to just do generic martial arts choreography and just put the special moves in, right? But to develop an entire choreography where every move and every movement and every stance still has to be true to the characters in the game. And I think they did a great job. Christian Howard playing Ken, Mike Moe, who many of you will know as Bruce Lee in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Yeah, this is the final fight in the series. It's like the end of Ryu and Ken's training where it's no holds barred. They're allowed to use the huddle techniques, you know, the sort of energy projection stuff.
It's great attention to detail with the costumes, I've got to say. Straight out of the game, aren't they?
And it's nice, no doubling. You know, the actors did all the drama and all the action themselves. Look at this sidekick he gives him. Boom. That jerk back, we were running out of time. all the wire team had gone home. So I found a piece of rope, tied it to the back of Chris's belt, and I personally ran and did a wire pull for that shot here. Boom. That's DIY filmmaking, where the director has to run in and do a wire pull on his actor. And it was great working with the VFX house as well, in great detail for the Hadouken physics, the way they generate and launch and stuff.
That's a good front summy from Chris there. He does the arm swing back.
Down, Jap front, Japanese front somersault, as that technique's called, where you block underneath yourself. There are these parries in Street Fighter 3 that you can do, and this is an homage to those parries. As if any Street Fighter fan will know what I'm talking about, I don't even need to go into it. That was a real hook kick on Chris's head. Did you see that Mike did, where he does the nice bob under the hook? Boosh.
With the heel.
Yeah, with the heel.
Oh, shit, it's the heel.
That's what you want in stuff. And the nice Tatsumaki there, boom. Double Hadoukens. Nice kick from Chris, and he does a nice axe kick that hit him for real here. Boosh.
Oh, yeah. That is the flat of the foot.
Yeah.
Yeah, putting the effort in, these two.
Yeah. Yeah, just to bring something to life. It's just a video game or an anime, and to do it very faithfully and with a lot of heart. I mean, you've seen the film. It's a character story. It's not like it's wall-to-wall fighting.
You got into fantastic shape for this.
Boyka inspired. I was like, I can't let him hog all the goddamn fizzy glory.
Look at your traps. You're like Stallone in Rambo 3.
It was the arms, because think these Street Fighter characters have these sleeveless gis, and their arms fill the hole. Yeah. So you really need delts, folks.
Basically bodybuilders in the
You're
the guys and the buys.
Man, you got to do the Zalem and the bicep curls.
Amazing. Joey does the best Arnold Schwarzenegger impression I've ever heard.
You can do the whole rest of the interview in this voice if you like. Remember, I snapped my Achilles before we did Green Street 3. So that allowed me, I snapped my Achilles tendon 5 months before we did Green Street 3. So I had to live on my arms. That allowed me actually to start building the foundations of sort of really good upper body.
So doing all these movements here.
Calisthenic stuff. Because when your legs are busted, all you can really do is a lot of upper body.
Yeah, that's impressive work there, mate.
And it's doing this whilst writing, directing, producing, choreographing, learning to speak Japanese. It's a hell of a lot.
Going to the gym.
Yeah. My fight, this is where Akuma fights his master and kills him and then gets the beads and becomes the kind of undisputed.
This is my sensei from Ninja One.
Yeah, the amazing Togo Igawa, who is such a brilliant actor. First Japanese member of the Royal Shakespeare Company. Done over 100 films. He ups the game of everyone's acting on set. You know, I think any film should have a real veteran actor, because it always elevates the drama. That was a cool little combo. Front somersault, rebound, Superman punch. So you're doing the front instantly.
And you're doing that on a newly healed Achilles.
Yeah, messed up.
Yeah.
The show must go on. So Puma's very solid and hard. So it's into all your strikes have to have a lot of kime and solid finish. So something like Born, where it's very rapid and fluid, it's fighting in a completely different way, like this mythical martial art that's a mixture of like Kyokushin and, you know, Goju Ryu elements. And it's cool coming up with an old martial art that matches the game, and then learning it and learning kata in it and learning the feel. This was a real fireball on a wire. You can see that's a real CG. The other one's a CG, but that's a real fireball on a wire that I had filled with gunpowder. I like that shot.
Good stuff. It looks slick.
You push yourself in a way that you wouldn't really in any other circumstance with filming, don't you? Because you it's now or never, and film is for pain is temporary, film is forever, as this.
And you're only as good as your last production, in a weird way. It's not true, but of course, you know, you're going to be judged on the last thing that comes out. So when you're doing it, you've got to give it everything you've got. Even if it feels like you're on a sinking ship sometimes, you still got to try and do your best.
It's tough when if you don't believe in the project, but you're like, I've got to give it my all. It feels like you're investing into something that's just going to be a lost leader anyway, but you can't win them all.
And you, having directed Assassin's Fist and the others, you must be itching to direct again. And I'm sure a lot of fans want to know, is there going to be anything more from Street Fighter?
Boy, it's tragedy of Hollywood. After Assassin's Fist, it was so well received that I wanted to do a full cable TV show, hour-long episodes, and tell the World Warrior storyline with Chun-Li and Guile and M. Bison and the whole roster. We need a big budget. You couldn't do that on the paltry $3 million that we clawed Assassin's Fist through. So the only way is to, you know, is potentially work with a studio, you know?
Yeah.
So I pitched all around Hollywood. We had interest from almost every studio, super well received. Because of how well Assassin's Fist did, people were like, but you realize the problem is big shows in Hollywood, a showrunner is typically a very experienced writer. So the showrunner is a lead writer on a TV show. Problem with something like Street Fighter, I need to showrun it. If someone else is brought in to showrun it who doesn't understand Street Fighter, they're going to want to make it their own. And then we end up with Legend of Chun-Li again. So I signed with a huge studio. We had David Ayer on to direct the pilot episode, showrunners on, but it starts being steered away from what I want it to be and what I know will be a success. Cut long story short, the studio didn't shop it in time before the license ran out and the rights went back to Capcom. So can you believe 5 years of my life developing this show with some prolific showrunners and David Ayer and all that stuff, and then the studio lose it at the final hurdle. Yeah. And the rights have gone back to Capcom. So we're back to square one. I've got a 100-page treatment for the show I want to make. You know, if it doesn't get made, I'll release it as a book or a graphic novel one day. But
there's
been a lot of reshuffling at Capcom. So the fight's not over, but there's nothing immediately planned. So as a result, I've been writing a slate of other projects for myself.
Well, listen, Joey, it's been great to talk to you, mate. Glad to have you on the show.
It's a great show. You're doing as every guest you've had. I watch every episode. I'm a big fan. And you've filled a niche. No one's been doing this. People call you the Joe Rogan of the martial arts world now, but you're more important than just, hey, it's cool to hear, but you're archiving. Because look, these action aficionados are not going to be around forever. The kind of titans of the industry. Yeah. And you are kind of recording and preserving their stories and their insights for people long after we're gone. Isn't it funny to think after we've departed this earth, Art of Action is going to exist somewhere for action people in the future to come and...
Well, it will be there to be watched, yeah. I hope it can be like that. And yeah, I definitely need to talk to the Jackie Chans and the Sammo Hungs of this world, for sure. But no, I really enjoy it. And, you know, listen, we're good mates. We have been for a long time. Yeah. You're a great guy. It's not. Just as I'm picking you up, you've ruined it.
I got jelly legs then. I felt all flirted with. Yeah, but go on.
I wish you the best of luck in the future. We want to see more Street Fighter, and I look forward to whatever you've got coming up next, mate. You keep going.
Thank you. You too, my man. Cool.
See you, mate.